We're going to open the program with a fine columnist from the Register Guard. You can catch his work in the sports section online. It's registerguard.com. Try ducksports.com. Of course, on Twitter, Austin Meek, RG. Actually, it works better with an at. Austin, happy December. How are things with you?
Hey, Steve. Things are great. How are you doing?
Awesome. No complaints. Now, you covered Kansas State football. And I've said on this show before, prior to moving to Eugene in 1990, all I ever knew about K-State and Oregon State was they were always in the Sports Illustrated annual bottom five worst teams. I mean, no, seriously, from 55 through 91, they had one winning season. With the retirement of Bill Snyder, you know the program well, would the word revered among Wildcats supporters be accurate?
I think that would be accurate. Certainly, Bill Snyder has been, over the last couple years, there's been a lot of speculation about his future. It would certainly be accurate to say there is a pretty significant portion of the K-State fan base that was ready for him to retire. But even among those people, I think most of them are able to take a step back and say, my goodness, what he accomplished there has to be one of the most amazing coaching jobs ever done in college football. Because like you said, you know, if you didn't grow up around it or if you didn't follow K-State football before Bill Snyder, it's hard to really comprehend how bad they were. A couple years before he was hired, back, I believe, in 1988, Sports Illustrated came out to do a big story, basically, about K-State football as just the most hopeless, moribund program in college football. And Bill Snyder came there, and within a few years, he had them go into bowl games and had them within one play of going to the national championship game in 1998. So from where K-State was before he got there, to where it is now, it's just it has to go down as one of the great coaching jobs in college football history.
No, it's a cliche, but you know, legacy is a legit topic with him. When Oregon played them in 2013, I asked him one question, and first he was a really nice guy. I was kind of just BSing around with him. I said, "What do you think of Oregon's team speed?" And without thinking, he's like, "Fastest team I ever saw." I was like, "Oh, okay."
Well, I'm impressed that he was BSing with you because I covered him for several years, and I don't think he ever did that with me. He did not usually have a lot of time for the local beat reporter, so I'm impressed that you were able to carve out a little time with the coach.
I would say a minute and 42 seconds it took.
Okay, that sounds about right.
How you doing? Congratulations on the season. I just wanted to ask you, you've been here about blah, 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 team speed. Fastest team I ever saw. Thanks, coach. Have a good one.
Well, you know, the famous story about him was that he was such a workaholic that he didn't eat. Like, he didn't have time to eat. He didn't eat meals during the day. He would work like 20 hours a day, and he wouldn't eat. And the other story was that early in his career, and this is kind of urban legend, but it might be true, early in his career, he visited a hypnotist to try to hypnotize him to be able to not have to sleep anymore. He thought he could be more efficient with his time if he didn't have to sleep. So he tried to get hypnotized into not needing to sleep, and I don't think that worked for him, although even up into his late 70s, I know that that man did not get a lot of sleep.
Sounds like a Seinfeld episode with Kramer cutting down on his sleep, just getting power naps.
Exactly.
You said urban legend. Let's move to Urban Meyer. I wanted to get to him because we all follow the game. So what was your initial reaction? You know, you wake up, you go about your day, then you hear Urban Meyer's retiring. What went through your head?
Well, I wasn't really surprised because there had been speculation about his health and his future over the last few weeks, and a lot of the events that have happened at Ohio State this year, I think, pointed to this happening. So I certainly wasn't surprised. I certainly wasn't sad. I don't dislike Urban Meyer necessarily, but if you're not an Ohio State fan, or I guess before that a Florida fan, Urban Meyer was probably not the guy you would say was your favorite coach. You know, if he was your coach, you probably liked him. But he was not one of those guys who was just like universally beloved outside of his own fan base. So not any tears being shed on my part that Urban Meyer is retiring, but certainly I can recognize that I've said outside of Nick Saban, you take Nick Saban out of the equation, Urban Meyer is the most successful college football coach of this era.
You know, well, from a lot of the guys who played for him at Florida, you know, I think the word renegade was used. But then I think prior to this year, most people thought of him still as a football coach. Is there any logic to, you know, 10 years from now, his name surfaces and like some before him, folks are going to think about Courtney Smith and how he handled it? Or do you think time is more kind to him and it's more about the national championships at two different schools?
You know, I expect that incident to kind of become a footnote in Urban Meyer's career, whether it should be or not. I think we can have that conversation. But I think when you look at the whole scope of his college football coaching career, it's going to be a really complicated story. You know, it will certainly be Tim Tebow and the national championships at Florida. It'll also be the off the field problems that happened at Florida, the way he left that program, and in the same way, it'll be the success he had at Ohio State. But it also will be the fact that, in some significant ways, it seemed like a guy who was obsessed with the details, a guy who was a total control freak, also had a way of kind of looking past some of those details when it was convenient for him. So I think it all will combine to be kind of a complicated narrative about Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I agree. That's accurate. We continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So the games that mattered this past weekend, the SEC title game, Clemson, Ohio State, and Central Florida getting their wins. It came down to three unbeatens, and we now know it's Oklahoma. But if it were the selection committee of one being you, who would you have sent to the playoff?
I thought the committee did the right thing, but I was not convinced that's what they were going to do. I thought Saturday night when I went to bed, I did think that there was a chance that Georgia was going to get that number four spot over Oklahoma. And when you lay it out on paper, there really is not a good argument for Georgia to get that spot. They didn't win their conference. They had two losses. Oklahoma was 12-1, won the Big 12. Clearly, based on the quantifiable things, Oklahoma deserved the spot. But remember, with the committee, it's not really about picking the four most deserving teams. It's about picking the four best teams, and how you quantify best is very subjective. And I thought there was a chance the committee would say the way Georgia played against Alabama, even though they came up short, was so impressive that the committee thought Georgia deserved to be one of the four best teams. They didn't go that way. I'm glad they didn't go that way. I think the right thing to do was give Oklahoma that spot. But I'm going to guess that there was some serious discussion of that in the committee room.
Yeah, I thought they got it right. I did not think UCF had a chance, and we know all the reasons. But with three unbeatens, the pure football fan in you, how much would you have liked to have seen Central Florida in there? And I'm also going to qualify it with their starting quarterback, Milton McKenzie, just once and for all to say, answer it on the field. Let's find out.
Yeah, I think that's an important qualification you had there, because without McKenzie Milton, I don't think many people would have given UCF a chance to be competitive. Maybe even with him, nobody would have. But I do think that Central Florida team at full strength, you know, going for their second consecutive national championship, if you ask them, would have been a compelling storyline. One thing I was thinking about, and I know that we've talked about this, but especially if Georgia had gotten in, but even as it is, you know, I think we're starting to see a little more momentum now for the idea of an 8-team playoff. And I've been kind of on the fence about that. I think four is fine. I think four is a big improvement over what it was before. But I'm starting to feel like, you know, and it's better this year without Georgia, because if Georgia had been there, it would have been a title game rematch from last year, and then potentially a rematch of the title game the two previous years with Alabama and Clemson. We're just starting to see the same old teams in there every year, and you do start to feel like, you know, I'd like to see a Central Florida in there. I'd like to see some fresh blood in the playoffs. Going to eight teams would give you a chance to do that. You would see some different teams in there every year, whereas right now it is starting to feel a little bit familiar with these same teams in there every season.
Yeah, Golden State and Cleveland in the NBA.
yeah, exactly.
You know, I know you're supposed to keep your Heisman ballot secret. And again, like the selection committee in the end, I think they got the three finalists correct. I'm not even sure how I would have voted 1, 2, 3, but it would have come down to Murray, Tagovailoa, and Haskins for me. So without violating any code, what could you tell us about your read on that trio or who you might have included?
So I can tell you that I had two of the three on my ballot. And the third guy I had on my ballot may not be on anybody else's ballot. I kind of went out of left field on my number three, because you vote for three finalists. And my number three guy, I can tell you that he's a defensive player. And it was partly for me, I think, just out of principle that you look back at the history of the Heisman, I can't think of another defensive guy other than Charles Woodson who won the Heisman. Maybe there was one back in the 50s.
No.
Does your encyclopedic knowledge of sports include that?
No. Woodson's the only one that, who was a full-time defensive player, even though he returned punts and played some wide receiver. No, that you would be correct.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't believe that every year in the history that the Heisman has been handed out, the best player in college football that year was an offensive player. There have been some good defensive players who did not win the Heisman Trophy. You know, I remember when Ndamukong Suh
yep.
was at Nebraska, and he was probably the most dominant college defensive player I've seen in college football. He did not win the Heisman, so if he's not going to win it, we may never see a defensive player win it again. But I do think in principle, it's good to consider defensive players. I like to put one on my ballot if I can, so I did that this year. The other two spots were the two quarterbacks, but I will keep that order and who they were to myself out of respect for the Heisman Trust and its very, very strict rules.
A couple of final thoughts for Austin Mika, the Register guard. With Washington State missing out on a major invite, Oregon probably went from the holiday to the movie rental bowl. They match up with the rare team who plays like it's 1978 in Michigan State. Well, what are you making of this Oregon team matching up with this edition of the Spartans?
Well, better the Red Box Bowl than the Blockbuster Bowl, right?
Yeah.
Blockbuster is like there's one left in the United States, right?
Yeah, it's so in Alaska.
You're in the Blockbuster Bowl. Yeah.
Oh, Bend.
You've really fallen down the ranks if you're in the Blockbuster Bowl. As I put it in my column, I guess, on Monday, I think the Ducks are going to be fired up for the Red Box Bowl. I don't know if anybody else is going to be, but I think they will be, coming off that Vegas Bowl last year, wanting to end their season on a high note. I think Oregon's going to be pretty motivated in that game. I think that Michigan State is going to get a pretty good shot from Oregon. It's not a matchup that's real sexy. You know, Oregon fans, they've seen Michigan State before. It was just a couple years ago that those teams played a home and home. Frankly, when both of them had better teams and both of them had a lot more at stake than they're going to have in the Red Box Bowl. So I don't see Oregon fans getting real fired up about this game. But I do think the Ducks are going to take it seriously. Michigan State is a name brand team. It's not the Holiday Bowl. It's not where Oregon wants to be. But for this year where they are, I think it's fine.
I was going to ask you about men's basketball, but for superstition's sake, I want to get to the Chiefs. I heard the best stat ever. Pat Mahomes has as many touchdown passes as Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers combined. So, yep, 20 and 21, he's got 41. So if you incorporate that idiot Kareem Hunt, they now play Baltimore, the Chargers, and the Seahawks in a row. How you liking their shot? How you like where they're sitting now?
Well, So I could be mistaken about this, but I think we may have had a glaring oversight last week, because I don't think that we did our superstitious Chiefs mention last week. And then, of
You're
course,
right.
what happens?
You're right.
The horrible, horrible Kareem Hunt story, which I'm not in any way, shape, or form implying that you or I had anything to do with that, but it's a terrible story nonetheless. So I guess what it boils down to from a football perspective, and there's a lot more to it than football, but from a football perspective, Pat Mahomes is basically going to be the show now, right? It's going to come down to how far can Pat Mahomes take the Chiefs, and I think he can take them a long way. This is going to be a challenging part of their schedule. Now, the Chargers are playing really well. They're only a game back in the AFC West, so it's not like the Chiefs have just got this thing sewed up, but the Chiefs play the Chargers, I think, on a Thursday night at Arrowhead, which is a good situation for them. I think they play the Seahawks in Seattle on December 23rd. That'll be a really interesting game. So, you know, without their starting running back, they certainly have some questions now. It's not like this is just a cakewalk for them to win the West and get the number one seed, but they're still in pretty good shape, and they still have Pat Mahomes, so I like their chances.
All righty. He's Austin Meek, folks, at Austin Meek RG on Twitter, registerguard.com, ducksports.com. Good stuff. I'm going to try and hack into your system and find your Heisman ballot. But until then, we always appreciate you getting us started. And we'll talk soon, Austin. Thanks a lot.
I think the Heisman people are going to be outside your house in an unmarked van doing some surveillance. So be careful what you do.
You got it. Thanks, Austin.